windy today.
Oh, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware, we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are trying to reach some sort of a resolution, something that both sides can settle on as an idea worth promoting. What about your New Year's resolution? Did you give up? Do you make them for the fun of breaking them, or do you make them, keep them, and have a story to tell? Most of my resolutions have been pretty simple and easy to keep. I don't want to face the failure. What about you? Do you have a resolution, or is it another bah humbug? I'm Dan.
I'm Teresa.
I'm Frankie.
I'm Shirley.
I'm Lee.
First question, do you make resolutions?
Yes, I do make resolutions. My resolution for 2017 was to quit smoking. I hadn't smoked for about 8 years, hooked up with somebody that did smoke, smoked for 5 years, and so January, I said I was going to quit smoking in 2017. It took till May 3rd. I haven't had a cigarette since May 3rd. Don't crave having a cigarette. Don't even think about having a cigarette. So my resolution for 2018 is to lose all the weight that I gained after I quit smoking in 2017. You know, I was down to 150 and I gained 30 pounds on the right side of my body.
Just the right side.
Just the right side.
So you kind of
my doctor
like
said all my numbers were perfect, and I was a perfect weight for two 15-year-old males.
So that was this year you quit.
That was this year I quit.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Yeah, first of all,
absolutely.
That's a tougher. I had seven uncles that all passed away, that all died with complications of cigarette smoke, including my father, who was at the age I am right now when he died. So.
Good motivator.
And that weighed in heavily on your decision.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
I finally quit. I made a New Year's resolution several years, not necessarily in a row, but for several years I made this resolution that I was going to quit, and I failed each and every time. And finally what I realized was that it was the inside, whatever within me, suddenly you get the inspiration, you get the whatever scared out of you because somebody you know dies of cancer or something. So I wound up quitting in the spring, actually, was when I finally, the light bulb went off, I guess, or I had that inner sensation of whatever, and I quit. So I can't say that I've ever succeeded in any kind of a major resolution, but...
That's pretty major. That's a life-saving...
That's pretty major, yeah.
I was coughing on stage during performances to the point where I have to back off the microphone, and, you know, being an entertainer, I sing 30 songs, and I said, okay, something has to change. This has got to go. And I threw away a pack of Marlboros Sunday morning at about 11 o'clock, and that was it, May 3rd. And for whatever reason, I said, don't start this morning all over again. Got rid of them, and that's been it. If you're a smoker, just stop it.
You're talking about a certain kind of willpower, because people say all the time, oh, I've tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. You know, well, there comes that point. I'll tell you when I quit, and here we're off subject from resolutions onto smoking, but I quit when I had pneumonia and I could hardly breathe. And I said, what am I thinking about? I can't even breathe and I want a cigarette? I must be crazy.
Right.
So, you know, I think everybody has their moment where they go, that's it. That's it. And some people can't stick with the that's it. They go, well, you know, maybe one or two wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, that one or two is the problem. I mean, what is it? Like, you quit for a bunch of years and started again for 5 years?
I had quit, it's like being a drug addict and somebody hiring you for a job in a pharmacy. You know, I was in the car business for years. My family were big car people, you know, and you're around guys that are smoking. But I quit. And then I hooked up with a gal that was a heavy smoker. And I hadn't smoked for 5 years since I... You know, up until that point. And then, if you're around somebody who's smoking continuously, in my case, I picked it right back up again.
Yeah. I did the same thing, only it wasn't because of a partner. I don't know what, but it was, I quit for a year, I think. And then I thought, well, it's been a year. I can have one. I was back to smoking full time for 3 years. And I just thought that was ridiculous. So I quit again. And
good for you. How long has it been?
Almost 40 years.
I feel really
sorry for the young people that I see.
You were only 12
smoking.
When you started smoking.
That's it. Yeah, that's right.
Three. I was three. No, yeah. Just kidding. No, but anyway, I think you can make a resolution. As you said, you can make them and break them and whatever. Resolutions only work if they're something you're deadly serious about. Otherwise, they're just something you say, oh, what's your New Year's resolution? You say, oh, I guess I'll resolve to walk a mile every day. Well, you know you're not going to do that, mm-hmm. You know, or maybe 5 miles every day, you wouldn't do that. I don't think resolutions really work for me. I either decide to do something or I don't, but it doesn't have anything to do with New Year's.
So, but the process of deciding to do something is, in fact, a resolution.
But not New Year's necessarily.
But not New Year's.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that it works with me. I mean, you know, when I think of this is a momentous occasion and the time of the year, it's the first of the year and so on and so on. And for me, it's like, yeah, okay, but I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, you've got to kind of build up to it, too, which is hard going for a first-of-the-year resolution when you need that build-up time to get your head straight when you've just gone through Christmas season and everybody's throwing candy and sweets and alcohol and everything else that you probably don't want to do for, you know, a month before you start. So the first of the year is especially tough time to do it, I think.
Well, I think I have a real attitude about this whole holiday and first-of-the-year business, and I subscribe to the idea that all of nature sort of goes into hiding, you know. The animals hibernate, trees all lose their limbs, and, you know, not their limbs, but their leaves, and plants and animals take a break, basically. Just the opposite happens to human beings. They go, oh, no, I can't wind down. I've got to rev myself up. I think it's a phony thing to do to the natural rhythms of nature and of ourselves. So I think that's why it doesn't make much sense in my book to say, well, after the first of the year, I'm going to do this and so. Well, after the first of the year, you're still in that dormant stage, basically, from a naturalistic point of view. And then by the time spring comes around, then you're starting to wake up and get really going again. But I think mankind somehow decided, I don't know when, but decided that it wasn't okay to just lie around and take it easy, that they had to find ways to stir themselves up and have fun. And, you know, it's an attempt to stay happy when actually you probably should just let yourself let down.
Chinese medicine would really agree with you on that.
Yeah, I really believe it.
They have the five seasons, and this season of the year, you're supposed to fall back like the leaves are decaying and everything is mm-hmm. planting itself in the earth and renewing itself in a really quiet way for the new growth that's to come.
Yeah.
And so we run around in light lights and party all night, and it's exactly the opposite of what theoretically the Chinese folks would have us do.
And people think, oh, I shouldn't be feeling sad. Oh, yeah, it's okay.
That's right. It's a grief season.
It's a real emotion, and it mm-hmm. really makes sense to let yourself have that downtime.
And Robert Bly would agree with you that, you know, well, we don't, as
he must be a very
Westerners,
smart fellow.
know very much about how to deal with grief, so we fight it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, I talked a little bit in the when we were talking about the holidays in general. I talked a little bit about it being that time of the year when, as you were saying, we hibernate, etc. But we don't as human beings. But it's a turning point. It's when suddenly on December 21st the days start to get a little longer. And we live in modern times of prosperity, and we're really quite lucky that we can easily find food and all that. But 500 years ago, that wasn't the case. We didn't have the plentiness that we have now. Back then, you worried about whether or not if the grain was in fact going to survive in the silo. And in this part of the country, this was an interesting thing that I read once about the West Coast phenomenon. Originally was owned by the Russians, and they gave up on it mm-hmm. for the simple reason they couldn't keep grain in the silos. It would rot because of the humidity mm-hmm. and the rain and everything else. So they just completely gave up on this part of the world and sold us Alaska and that whole thing. And it's modern technology, basically, that has made this part of the world habitable for people, seriously speaking. I mean, you know, you go inland and life's a little better there. But this was a turnaround in the season that we looked forward to, the longer days and the warmer temps and life renewed.
Right, the whole solstice thing.
I think that's where the resolution bit comes from. It's, okay, it's a new year. We're going
to
approach
it differently. A time to reflect and say, what could I do better? Is there something that I should be doing that I haven't been doing?
Mm-hmm.
Am I happy with where I am? Or can I set some new goals? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think for a lot of people, it has to do with things that are addictive, like eating too much or drinking too much or smoking or, you know, any of the things that we say, I can do better than that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes you succeed, hopefully.
Well, the whole concept of goal setting is one that I've gone around a bunch of times about, in that I used to set goals in a really fierce kind of way. And it played right into my, I don't know if it's natural, but my kind of competitiveness, and I would just stress myself out over these things. And in the end, I don't think that was particularly healthy. I'd rather have what I think of as an intention. I have an intention to move my life in such and such a direction, rather than it has to be this way no matter what. And that seems to work for me a little bit better than being so compulsive about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you don't have to do it all at once.
That's right.
If you know, I mean, finding the direction and finding the place you want to be, and then creating the path to get there. I mean, here's just a little quick example. When I moved to Brookings from Lodi, California, 14 months ago, I didn't know anybody here, not one person. I've been a professional musician for over 50 years. Didn't know anybody in the music market. I picked up a little insider, Southern Oregon Magazine, you know, which was great for me because it gave me a contact of all the local musicians and what was going on. In less than a year, because I set a goal, I made a plan, I went after it, and I'm the busiest entertainer on the Southern Oregon coast.
Wow.
But what I'm just saying, pick the direction, set a goal, and go for it.
Well, what is the saying about God laughs while you make a plan,
it sound easy.
You know? Because usually, most of my life, when I've had a goal, that other things have come up along the way that took me in some other direction that maybe satisfied that goal, but not in the way I thought it was going to be. Having an intention about wanting to move your life in a certain direction, something like that, then you can kind of stay open to other possibilities and opportunities.
Don't lock yourself in.
Right. If your goal is too set in stone, then you might pass up on something that might have got you where you want to be, and even faster and more pleasurably.
Keep your ears and eyes open. But I know that I've definitely seen what's happened for me, and I've had other friends, not just from a Christian standpoint, but just in general, just in spiritual. The better person that you try to become, I know the better person I try to become, the more positive things come my way. I've seen it happen.
The law of attraction.
The law of attraction.
Yeah.
You know, the secret. You know, you are what you say.
That and a work ethic.
Well, yeah. I think getting back to...
I'm get out of bed, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm retired. I don't work.
Well, I mean, if you want to have something happen, thinking about the long term, I find, leads me to make excuses about today. I have to make today count for what it is I'm trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. If I just say tomorrow, and then the next day is tomorrow, and then I never get around to it.
Yeah, I understand that the first meeting of the Procrastinators Club is still being put forward another day or two. That's an old joke from somewhere.
But 3 years they've been trying to get together.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that one of those things that they say, live in the present because you can't do anything about the past? And I've forgotten what it is about the future, but yeah.
Well, and to think that today is that tomorrow that you were thinking about. Getting back to your original idea about, do resolutions work and why make them? And is this something that you can look back on and say, yeah, you know, I made a decision and I vowed that at the first of the year, you have to set a time maybe to say, even if it's a New Year's resolution and you say, okay, in April, I will do X and Y, or when summertime comes, I will do thus and so, as opposed to something that you have to immediately enact. Like with you, you said, I'm quitting smoking and I did it. I understand that. You know, some people say, well, I'm just going to cut back. I'll just cut down and I'll just cut back. And then eventually I'll taper off. And then one day I'll wake up and I, you know, that works for some people.
It worked for me previously.
Yeah. But at any rate, the whole resolution idea, I think if you say, if you're really capable of evaluating yourself and saying, is there something about me I can do differently that would make my life better, and maybe those people around me won't hate me quite so much, you know? So what can I do? No, you really have to be conscious. You have to ask yourself seriously, do I want to do this? Is this meaningful? Because otherwise you'll just go on being who you are all the time.
You have to answer it honestly.
Yeah.
That's
hard.
You've got to be answered honestly. Yeah.
And some things are easier said than done. Quitting smoking is, I've heard it said that it's easier to quit heroin than it is to quit smoking.
It's a drug, yeah.
And that's a powerful addiction. Whereas making a resolution to be a little nicer this year than I was last year, kind of
thing. I hope you will be.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, no.
I'm looking forward to that.
The whole town is.
Yeah. We're all pulling for you, Dan.
Okay.
We didn't want to say anything because you know how you are.
No, but you just said something, Frank, that I think is sort of at the nut of it all, and that is, do we really see ourselves? You know, and that's hard. Do we know how other people perceive us? Is somebody sitting over there saying, gosh, I wish you'd make a New Year's resolution to do X or Y, you know? Are we communicating with each other honestly? So we know each other and we know ourselves. That's a toughie.
Well, they say that we do not know ourselves, and that other people know us much better than we know ourselves. And
yeah, the people that say that, they don't know themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the people that say money can't buy happiness. They're always broke.
And what somebody once told me, that the reason psychologists get into the field that they're in is because they want to try to know themselves.
I think that's absolutely true. I think you'd have to have that kind of personality to want to delve into people in that kind of way, because we're complex, mm-hmm. you know? We're very complex.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people become therapists in order to fix themselves
mm-hmm.
and then figure out that, you know, it's not a bad gig and they can be of service in the
yes,
process.
Well, yes.
Hopefully not at the beginning of the process, but down the road
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah.
And finally speaking,
understand
it is a lot easier to say to somebody, you know, you should quit smoking than it is to actually do it yourself. And
well, to understand that they put stuff in the cigarettes to make you addicted. It's
mm-hmm.
not like some casual little thing where you could slap your hand and say, don't have that extra chocolate, you know, although chocolate is a bit addicting too.
Ooh.
But did I just hit a nerve?
Well, my mom told me on the phone, honey, I made 4 different types of fudge this year. Good, Mom.
Oh, wait till you taste
Give them to
balls.
The neighbors. Yeah.
There is those ruffles. Yeah, somebody gave her the old C's fudge candy recipe many
Uh-oh.
Years ago. A friend of hers worked at I'm going to slip you something top secret. Boy, that's a good one. There's no such thing as one piece.
So, Frankie, does this recipe hold true?
Good stuff.
It tastes like the seas.
Exactly.
Did you bring some?
No, I'll bring some back. Guaranteed. It's an 8-hour drive, though, from Stockton here. It'll have to be a large box.
Yeah. So that'll work.
Yeah.
No,
stuff.
Put it in the trunk. My mother
yeah,
would.
There you go.
My mother would sometimes bring a care package home to me from my grandmother. She would go visit my grandmother and bring all this food home, and she would have to put it in the trunk. My favorite things would get in the trunk behind the suitcase so that it wouldn't get eaten before she got home to me.
Not safe in the back seat, obviously.
No, it's trunk. Only the trunk.
At what age are you talking about? When you were how old?
Oh, I was like high school or college.
Oh.
I had jobs, and so, and she was in education. She had summers off, so she would go to grandma's and bring stuff home to me.
So no sense of discipline even then, huh?
No.
Which just goes to show it isn't that easy to change yourself, really. And I think we should cut ourselves some slack.
Too hard on ourselves.
Yeah, oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, beating yourself up if you didn't make it through the resolution. I think the thing to do is just say, okay, tomorrow I start again. Don't give up. Don't get into that headspace of, you know, well, there's something wrong with me. I can't lose 20 pounds or whatever it is you're trying to do, and deciding that there's something wrong with you or something. Just start over again.
And don't be hard on yourself. Don't be hard on yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just don't be hard on yourself. Just and set realistic goals. You know, people, no matter what it is, just set realistic goals. Best thing I had a philosopher, well, actually, it was a martial arts instructor I had many, many 40 years ago in Hawaii. He had said, he was one of the first ones to say to me, "You are what you say."
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I said, I couldn't do this whatever kata or was it. I said, "Just," and he goes, "You are what you say, Frankie. You say you can't do it, I said, oh, yeah, you know, that makes sense. Or, well, let's pick up on it.
Shirley, I like your idea of springtime. You know, you can think about New Year's resolutions, but you're right. It's not the best time of the year. And it's a new year, so we put a lot of emphasis on that. But I like the idea of a March or April. I think that we all have a sense of promise during that time. And I like that idea.
Maybe we can convince the rest of the world, but you'll never get rid of the idea that people feel like Christmas time or the holiday, however you tend to look at that, we've revved that up over the years into this, you're supposed to just be having a blast, you know, it's fun, fun, mm-hmm. fun. And the excitement the children get into, it's something that I look back on and I say, you know, this is one of those stories where I went to school, you know, walking 20 miles each way in the snow, uphill both ways, etc. But in my day, if you got a nice special present for Christmas, that was just divine, you know. Mm-hmm. Kids have toys thrust at them all year long. We have Walmart with toys on the shelves all the time. It's like Halloween. The candy's always there. Everything is accessible and to an excess so that it's not special anymore. And trying to make things special, I think, is really hard. I mean, what is special? What do you see as special? How do you celebrate? By eating more, by drinking more, by partying more, by what? What is it? Giving more gifts, buying more things? It's just a different kind of world than I think it was when the so-called tradition began of giving somebody a special gift. Or if you're, you know, thinking of the Christ child and that is your attitude about it, then staying with that rather than running out and seeing how many presents you can buy and how much you can give. To me, it's just phony. I mean, it doesn't have a sense of realism about it. It's like, you got to do it. You got to get out there and do it.
You have to buy a Christmas present.
Yeah, it's not okay, yeah. You know? It's weird.
I agree. But
you like to party.
I do. I like celebration of life and mm-hmm. friends and family. I do enjoy a reason to celebrate. I think it's the way that we celebrate. We need to be true to what we enjoy in ourselves and not get caught up. And one thing that I do, I've never put a monetary value on any present that I bought for my family. It doesn't matter.
Oh, good.
I buy something if I find it that they like. And during the Christmas program that we did here at Brookings Cafe, I talked about trying to find the perfect gift for somebody. And I don't want to just be told, I want this, and go buy it. And gift cards are the worst. I hate them. I just won't give something if I have to do a gift card. I want to get No.
Well.
Okay, I gave you a gift card. I did give him a gift card for McDonald's and Dutch Brothers for Valentine's Day with some chocolates, but it was kind of a joke, too.
Well, and she knew that was the kind of thing that I would really appreciate. And I wish you hadn't mentioned about the, you know, and so now I'm starting to feel hungry. And this is a problem that we have encountered in my family is we went through, and this is off the resolutions topic, but nonetheless, first of all, we went through exchanging checks because that's what it turned out to be. You know, we drew somebody's name and we asked them what they wanted, and then it turned out to be we were just exchanging checks. And then finally we said, well, for the kids, and then so as it turned out for the kids, well, dang, kids can be hard to shop for, especially if you're a grown-up and you're not in that culture. So the obvious easy solution is to give them a gift card. They're happy, you're happy, and all that sort of stuff. I think there's a time and a place for everything. But to get back onto the idea of resolutions, we've talked about, I think, probably some of our best resolutions, which was a resolution to quit smoking. I think that's a pretty big one. I think it's significant. I think most all of us, if we don't remember the exact date, which I don't, we remember doing it, and we remember the pain of going through it. And I'm going to say that I'm glad that they had that nicotine gum to chew on, because I don't think I would have made it otherwise. And I'm glad that's around these days. And so that was, I think, my best resolution, even though I didn't actually make it for New Year's. So what kind of failures, what resolutions have you made that have been absolute failures?
I'm not big on New Year's resolutions, but one thing that I've tried, and I've usually failed, almost always failed, I want to write in a journal. I like them when I do it, but I can't keep up with it. And so I'll get a journal. I even bought one. I didn't buy one last year. The year before I bought it, I think there's 3 entries in it. But I keep wanting to keep the journal all year. I just can't do it, but I think it's a great idea. And sometimes I've done it for a month or two at a time, and I really enjoy going back and seeing, oh yeah, I remember that. My mother did it faithfully. I mean, she'd write silly things in it sometimes, or just basic things, or sometimes meaningful. It went all over. And so that's been, I'm not big on New Year's resolutions because I try to be good all year or true to myself. I'm not perfect, but you know.
I think you're perfect.
Do you?
Okay. Yes, I do.
But I can't write in the journal, so I should just not. I didn't even buy one last year, so I guess maybe I've given up on that.
Is it because it's longhand?
No, it's not that.
Because sitting at the computer when an idea comes and pop it, you know, just type it into the computer, into a folder, that's, to me, as a writer, that's the thing that really, really works. Get an idea, just sit down and write it up on the computer. Hmm. It's faster and easier than getting out the journal and sitting there and writing longhand. That's just my way of doing it, but
it's worth a try.
Yeah.
Maybe I have my resolution.
First of all, I have the secret to keeping a journal. You just take all of the receipts out of your pocket and you throw them into a box.
There you go.
And then when you want to remember something, you sort through the receipts until you find it.
So there's nothing meaningful in your life that didn't involve money?
The receipt box. Very good.
The receipt box. Yeah, it tells me where I've been. The receipts do not lie.
But that's not thoughts. That's not ideas.
Well, that's true.
And
I agree with you about the computer, and I have tried, and I think I'm making a little headway of just reaching down here to this little Word file icon and clicking on it. The problem I have at this age is, and even cruising the net, is that I have this thought. So, okay, I open up another page, and I click the cursor up in the little search bar, and by the time I've done that, I've forgotten what it was that I want to search.
But if
the computer's open, then I do that. But I have recently gone back to the notebook, the 3-ring notebook that I had when I was working, because it's the industry standard. I used to get trade brochures and what have you, and they were punched for a 3-ring notebook. Made it real easy. I just slipped them right in. I can divide it up into different sections for, you know, this is all my health problems are in this section, and the doctors that I have to see, and over here is where I doodle sketches for cartoons or whatever.
But, you know, speaking of your cartoons, I mean, that's something that you're not, I hope, you're not doing that on the computer. You're doing that, you're drawing it, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think I'm looking around here at all of us are of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
really... I just turned 36 last year.
Oh, 40 for me. Yeah. But anyway, I think that the art of actually being able to put your thoughts down with a pencil or a pen on paper, mm-hmm. I think that really is something that we never want to lose, the ability to do that. The computer idea is that it's just quicker, kind of.
Well, and then...
And it's cultural at this point. I mean, you're talking about our age. If you're talking about kids that are under 30, a lot of them, I have heard, I don't know for sure, but I've heard that they are no longer teaching cursive in school.
Really? Whoa.
And I know that a lot of younger people I have seen that have signed checks or something while I'm, you know, standing next to them at whatever, they can barely sign their name.
Yeah.
But they're a whiz with a computer, so it's a different culture.
I'm not going to slam it. We've lost a great deal with this so-called technology. And one of the things that concerns me, my New Year's resolution would be, if I could get other people to agree with me on this, is to have an old-fashioned backup plan for things that you know might go awry. For example, The power goes down. You can't pump gas because it's on a computer. You can't check out groceries because it's on the computer. And I'll bet you those people at the counter don't know how to add up a line of numbers and tell you what the total might be either. And so we've sort of given up on having to have those skills.
Right.
And I think it's kind of dangerous to not have something. It's sort of like having a generator if you're a person who says, well, I know I live in this kind of area where I'm likely to need to use this, so I'll have one. But we don't have that for the big stuff. You know, we don't have that for, as I say, pumping gas or going to the grocery store, a couple of really basic things in our worlds because we drive cars and we don't grow our own food and go out in the backyard and pull it up and wash it out and eat it, you know. So that concerns me. And
well, it should concern you. They shut down the grid, the whole world goes down.
Exactly.
And it's not like it can't happen. They just have chosen not to do it yet.
It'll happen, I think, some level.
If somebody's, you know,
maybe
like
not.
North Koreans allowed to use it.
Sounds like
maybe
a
not.
Future topic to me.
Well, and so, okay, so we can talk about predictions for the new year a little bit, but I was thinking more in terms of the new year and those trivial little things that happen in the course of a year, like football games and whether or not if this would be a good year to get married or whatever.
Always a good year to get married.
Always a good year? Oh. If you're 18, I don't think it's a good year to get married.
Maybe not.
Statistically, those just don't survive. But
if you don't like football, then is that okay too?
Heck yeah.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. That's back okay.
To the, just want to, myself personally, on the keeping information and how do I write things out, being a singer-songwriter where I write continuously, I always keep a legal pad by my computer. Always. I mean, that's where I write everything down on. Oh, yeah. I've got to be at the radio station in case anyone. Oh, I need to call my mom at 3:30, whatever my deal is. Oh, I like this line. I need to work on this song.
Yeah.
I never throw any of those pages away. Fold them back, you know.
That's your journal.
See, that's why I went to the free ring, because I can easily pull out the pages that I know I don't need anymore.
And I'll just go back when I'm done with that pad. It goes in a box for my year, in my little year cardboard box.
Okay, so you use one pad per year?
I use one pad till I'm done with it. Okay. You know, I just sort of, you know, it's my everyday little deal. That might be going. It might make it. Might make it 2 weeks.
How many boxes full of legal pads do you have?
I've only been doing it for 3 years, so there's probably around 14 to a box.
New Year's resolution: get a storage unit.
Yeah. Get a storage unit.
My New Year's resolution is to get rid of my storage unit.
Right.
Okay, there you go.
Really, you can do it too. Get rid of it.
In defense of folks that don't have great memories and forget things before they can get to their computer, I have notes on my iPhone that I can dictate to, and it just takes a second, and then I can just speak it into there, even if it's like a writing idea or something like that, or something stupid like I have to pick up something at the grocery store. It all goes on my notepad in my phone that's always in my pocket. So that makes it really easy.
So you're all the way over into technical world.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm really Luddite, actually.
And that's right there to use. I know my kids get so mad they go, Dad, all these applications are right there in your phone. Why don't you use it?
What's an application?
Right. Well, how do I do that?
Now there's the little device that sits somewhere. Ours is between the kitchen and the living room, so we can holler from both directions. And,
tell me a joke.
Yeah, tell me a joke. Set a timer for, set an alarm for. What's 365 divided by 2?
Now there's more and more. There was Alexa, and who's the other person?
They'll probably.
Nice Siri.
There's one on the computer. What I think is interesting about that is that it's on my phone. Mm-hmm. It makes the shopping list really easy because I can just say, hey, Alexa, add such and such to the shopping list. And then when I get to the store, I pull it up on the phone.
Yeah, that's great.
And so maybe I should be making a resolution that I move from the computer to the phone. I've actually made that resolution. I've told myself for several times that's what I want to do. But then I look at the number of things that I have spoken into to the phone to tell it to remind me to do whatever. And 6 months later, I pull them up and I say, well, what the hell does that mean?
That's why we need secretaries.
What the heck does that mean? Yeah.
Well, you were talking about making resolutions in the spring. I have for a long time do resolution-ish things like 3 times a year. First of the year, around May sometime as we're looking at summer coming up, and then around Labor Day. That seems to work for me because then everything is sort of like, oh, what's this next season is about, you know? And I recommend that one.
That makes sense. It's a nice way to look at it.
Yeah. keeps it real current instead of trying to remember, oh, I said back in January I was going to do something in August, you know?
Do you feel...
Oh, yeah, I was going to work on my memory. That was it.
That's right.
Right. Got to remember to remember that, yeah. No, do you feel you're speaking a little bit the same language as I am? Do you feel like you actually are aware of the changes of the seasons? I mean, do you feel like physically, emotionally, you feel in touch with what goes on in the world, that actually when it comes to the fall and winter time, that you do want to slow down, that you do want to take it more easily, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't always do it, but I know I want to, and so giving myself permission, like I just didn't go to a party the other day because I had that feeling and felt like, oh, I'm letting people down and all that, but I very much feel the need to do that and just unplug and rest and sleep more. I can feel it. The sun goes down and I think, oh, it must be 10 o'clock at night. And I look at the clock and it's 7:30. I'm ready to go to sleep, really, if I let myself do it, you know. And it feels like something that is really nourishing. And, of course, we don't sleep enough. Almost anybody is sleep deprived these days.
Well, I probably,
I'm a musician. I am not sleep deprived. My day starts at about 10:30.
And ends at 4 a.m.?
No, actually, you know, the older I got, you know, I said, got up at 10:30. What am I thinking about going to bed for? It's like 6:30. You know what I mean? But I'm an avid reader, but I mean, I get up pretty late.
Well, you know, if you listen to the people on the TV, those people that tell you what you ought to be doing and how you ought to be doing it, et cetera, they'll bring on an expert who says, people don't sleep enough, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking... I do. I think sleep is very important. And I think to myself, I could sleep 9 or 10 hours a night and really feel like dynamite the next day. And if I don't get enough sleep, you don't want to be around me, truly.
Yeah, and the older I am, the more that is true.
Well, it's one of the most important things for a longer life.
But people say, don't waste your time sleeping. You ought to be up doing something.
Forget that.
Like what?
When your body rebuilds itself and reheals, you know.
It's, it's very, very important. So maybe a good New Year's.
Unplugging the machine for a while.
Yeah.
Well, here's another thought about resolutions that, in terms of making them soft.
French? Oh, revolutions.
Yes.
Resolutions,
yeah. Is that we used to sit around like on New Year's with whoever was there and say, okay, what do you want more of? What do you want less of?
Go home, you've been here all day.
What do you want more of? What do you want less of? And what's just right? And that seems to be a more organic or holistic way of doing it, to where you can talk about feelings and moods and things like that, rather than that, okay, I'm going to sit here with my pad and pen and put down my goals. They end up all being about making $1 million by the time you're 30 or whatever, you know, and real left brain stuff, you know, that doing it in that softer way seems to and create a little more dialogue with the different parts of yourself.
Isn't it the right brain that's the softer side?
Yes.
The left brain is... one that marches to the drummer or
That's
something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to work real well.
What do you think? Do you think that most people do get up on New Year's Day with a resolution kind of mindset? Or do you think people mostly do think, well, this is a new year, now I've got to make some changes or I've got to think about that? Do you think that's where most people are? Or are we just talking about it because... It was
I'm willing to bet that, and this is, I mean, we've got the computer here. We could run the numbers.
You could Google it.
But we're just taking a guess here. I'm willing to bet that it's more of a younger person phenomenon, that older people tend to be more realistic, less idealistic, whereas, as Lee said, you know, a lot of young people, I met lots of people who were in their 30s, or not their 30s, their 20s, their early 20s, and they said, yeah, I intend to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. And I think that's that youthful idealism that says, yeah, I'm going to make this New Year's resolution, and I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And when we get older, we realize, well, yeah, if you make $1 million by the time you're 30, this is my address in case you don't know what to do with all the money. But no, we pretty much recognize that that's kind of a long shot. And so I think that we probably do make resolutions as we get older, but I think they're simpler. I mean, like I said at the beginning, I'm afraid of the failure. So So I think it's just being more realistic about, can I really keep this one? And I'm going to try.
More valuing of the non-material things. I mean, by the time you're towards this end of life, you know, your foot's not on the accelerator of proving yourself through your career anymore for the most of us. And so you start to smell the roses a little bit more, want to incorporate that into a better balance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Finally, I think you see, yeah, you see that light too. How much do I really need?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's excess, excess. You know, the whole world is excess. And it's like, well, I don't really need this, you know.
Right.
I don't need a new car. What do I need a new car for? You know, this 12, 15-year-old car, this works fine.
Have you just seen the new model?
What do I need a 4,200-square-foot home? You know, I'm finding a little 1,100-square-foot whatever. You don't need all that. You know, I don't need this, and I need that. You know,
the concept of living lightly on the earth.
Just, well, just kind of bring it down. Save the planet. Just kind of peel back.
Well, that's why you're in Oregon, because
I love Oregon.
Yeah.
I wish I would have came here years ago. A little live for me, but that's okay. You know, conservative story.
Well, but you know, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I tell this story all the time, and I'll be brief about it. But I know so many people who bought big, beautiful homes during the time that I was there that maybe they paid $50,000 or $60,000 for, and thought they were in heaven, that they had the greatest house in the world, and et cetera, et cetera. Those houses are now $10 million, $12 million, $15 million. There is something so obscenely wrong with the idea of not being able to live in an area because you're not a gazillionaire. I was listening to something on the radio the other day. I think it was on KCIW, if I'm not I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't. Anyway, and somebody was talking about living in a particular area that was now away from the floodplain and a little bit more secure against certain kinds of natural disasters, and therefore the real estate was going up and up and up and up, and they weren't going to be able to live there anymore because of those natural disasters that had happened that were forcing people to live in these other areas that were now becoming exclusive. And we're all doing this to each other. We're all doing it on purpose somehow, you know, to make money the main thing so that you can't continue to live where you live because you can't afford to live there because somebody's going to come in and say, well, I'll give you twice as much as you paid for it. So you go, oh, I better take the money and run. Then where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
Someplace else where somebody says, oh, well, this has gone up, and so now you better sell it. There's something so dramatically wrong with that, and I don't have all the answers. I'm just bringing it up because I think it's a phenomenon that is absolutely real in our country, and it's happening all over the place.
It is all over the place. I know when I was in Dallas back a decade or so ago, but I've seen it in many places, but it was particularly noticeable because the Safeway, all the different department stores, grocery stores, everything had help wanted signs. And they actually had to close several different grocery stores because they just couldn't get help. And even here in Brookings, I've talked to restaurant owners who close a day or two a week that they wouldn't otherwise close, but they can't get enough help. And a lot of the reason for that is there's no affordable housing. Rentals are non-existent.
I can remember listening to my mother and father. We were ranchers in Tracy in 1958. I mean, just like they were in the other room, my mom saying to my dad, we're getting ready to move the stock and we sold the rent. She said, boy, Frank, I can't believe we paid $19,000 for this home. And he goes, you know, babe, our payments are going to be $175 a month. And I mean, which was a pretty big stretch.
Yeah.
And with their little down payment. When the house was sold for $1 million, during the the big interest deal crunch, you know, the real estate deal. But as a, for instance, I mean, my son is a prominent attorney in San Francisco. But he was, I remember talking to him, he was paying, something like $3,500 a month for a 1,400 square foot flat that was up by Sutter Gold or up there on the hill, a clinic, I forget where it was, beautiful area. I said, Garrett, how do people afford to live in San Francisco? He goes, you know, Dad, they can't. They end up maxing out their credit cards, spending all the money they have. They keep paying rent until they all of a sudden they realize we just can't live here anymore. I mean, and he's got a great income, and my daughter-in-law, she's a big shot with Facebook now. Before she was a VP with StubHub, but what I'm getting to is, they were looking for a house. They were going to, Dad, I'm moving out of the Bay Area. Practically everything that they were looking for, he goes, you know, Dad, I'd go to, he goes, here it is, and he's a land use attorney. He goes, I'll go to look at the house. there's already been 50 people there with their applications, their money. He goes, in the last seven houses I've looked at, people have paid up to $100,000 over the asking price to get it. And I can think of my folks sitting in that little room saying, yeah, you know, $19,000 and $175 a month payment. And here's this young man and my little daughter-in-law ended up finding a place and bought a place in Walnut Creek with like $725,000. You know, I mean, it's $725,000
mm-hmm.
for a 2,100 yeah. square foot Frank Lloyd Wright type of design. But I mean, you know, in Stockton, California, or it's Lodi, California.
Yeah, that's not exactly New York City.
It was a $350,000 house. But in Walnut Creek, just right on the other side of the bay from San Francisco, $700,000. And this was 2 years ago, and it's already went up.
Yeah.
Daddy goes, I've already made almost $150,000.
Well, here's a statistic for you in terms of Oregon. Oregon, overall Oregon, including, you know, Oshkosh, nowhere Oregon. Uh-huh. The asking price and the selling price of a home, I believe the figure is 97, but I know it's over 95% of the asking price is what is actually paid for the home. Mm-hmm. What that telling us is that people are paying almost full price for every home that's out there, including ones that are overpriced,
sure,
or sometimes paying over ask in order to come up with an average like that. That's the kind of demand there is throughout Oregon for property. It's crazy.
Well, and those are the people who are deciding to take the money and run from selling a home in another part of the country, and they come here and they go, gosh, it's dirt cheap. But when they pay that over the asking price, now they're raising our real estate prices so that the person who doesn't have that wants to come here and live. They say, gee, the prices have gone way up here. I can't afford it anymore. I must be terribly naive, but I don't get it. You know,
well, I just don't get it. And all things are not equal. And yeah, but when you think back, let's say 100 years ago, which...
I'm not that old. I can't think back 100 years.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Let's go back 200 years.
Oh,
well,
that's better.
Bread was what, a dime?
Is fine.
And but how much did a person make? I mean, a day's work was what, a dollar or something like that? I mean, I think that you have to look at it and understand that there is a great deal of relativity built into all of this, and all things are not equal. The people who live in places like New York City and Los Angeles and San Francisco are living on a much different scale of economy than those of us living in...
Which is why Oregon's a little bit cheaper, because there aren't good-paying jobs here particularly.
Right, and so it kind of comes down to the business of location, 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 but you also have to factor in inflation and mm-hmm. so on and so on. So I think, yes, the culture is definitely different. We all drive cars now, whereas in 1899, there were some cars around, but not really. They were prototypes for the most part, but there were people building them. But it took Henry Ford to give us cars. But
he never gave me one. Did he ever give you a car? No.
No, I got two of them. They were both black. No. But what I'm saying is that life was much more difficult back then than it is now.
But when you're in that life, you don't know that. That's the life that you're
in.
That's
true.
So, we didn't know we were poor until the government told we were poor.
That's right. But, you know, this is very simplistic on my part, I realize. But let's take my dad, for example, who when he was making $200 a month, and this is to feed five children mm-hmm. and his wife, seven people, we thought, wow, we're rolling in it, you mm-hmm. know, kind of back to your idea there. But there was sort of a cap somewhere that would say, yes, and if you take this kind of a job, you can, over a period of time, expect to have your salary increase. But there was still kind of that cap there. But we've long since blown that cap way off to the point where there's no ceiling anymore. I mean, as a young person working for one of these high-tech people, you can make millions and millions of dollars. Young people were never able to make that kind of money. This is a whole thing that's been created from this technological industry, because it doesn't happen in the other ones,
well,
you know, as much. It just doesn't, because of the demand. Like, you've got a phone, everybody's got a phone, and we've got all the computers and all these things, and we're willing to pay a lot of money for them, even though we know they're made in China, and those people make about a dollar an hour. We're willing to pay a lot of money for them. We're forcing the levels to go up all the time. We pop through those ceilings, and
well,
it looks
weird. there's a couple of things at work here. I mean, one of the things, and you can probably correct me on the stats, but it seems to me I read and keep hearing that actual dollars of wages have been stagnant since, what, the 70s?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So even though everything else is going up, our wages aren't. And that's giving us that teardrop-shaped economy now where the middle class is becoming almost non-existent and yeah, everybody's in that bottom part of the teardrop.
Yeah. Well, this is a topic that really we should have.
We got far afield.
What's our New York resolution?
So, yeah, really. So let's take a turn here.
Predictions.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to win the Super Bowl? Well, it probably will. We're maybe in that trend.
Somebody will win.
Get better at the same time, too.
Yeah, I mean, somebody will win.
A California team.
I can now afford a cell phone. I mean, you know, life's good for me. But, no, who's going to win the Super Bowl? Anybody a sports fan?
Who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Not me. I wouldn't even know a thing about it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't follow
sports. Why do you bring up the question then, if none of us know?
Well, because I thought that there were surely.
No. Don't call me Shirley. No, I haven't a clue.
Well, I think things are just going to continue to get better.
Predictions for the new year. Let's take tech. You know, we're talking about how the technology, driverless cars.
That makes me really nervous. Call me a Luddite, but I want to drive my own car. Thank you very much.
Very bad idea.
Yeah.
Very bad idea.
I think that's coming from everything I read a lot sooner than any of us realize.
Yeah.
And the first time,
it'd be good for alcoholics, I guess.
It will be.
Love it.
But just think about, driverless cars on the coast are going to be one of the later places that you will see it. But what if we're in Portland and we're just driving along and you look over and there's no driver in that car? Probably not next year, but within 2 or 3 is what they're saying.
And the insurance companies are what will drive driverless cars, because you, Lee, want to drive your own car. The insurance company will say, fine, that's fine. Based on your driving record, your insurance rates are going to be this. But if you elect to take a driverless car, you're going to realize maybe a 50% reduction in your rates, because the accident rate amongst driverless cars will be...
If it is. Well, but I think there's a lot. From what I've seen, the lane change, the driver collision alerts, all the stuff I've got on my car that makes me crazy. And now I'm totally distracted while I'm trying to do a fairly demanding procedure.
But if the computer makes that decision for you.
But if the computer fails, there you are.
Okay.
So
take where you're coming out from my driveway on Cape Ferrello getting onto 101. There's two lanes to turn into now. Theoretically, you would go for the slower lane because you're going to be a slower driver coming out of the side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, people come over that hill like a bat out of you know where, and it's very dangerous.
That's
if you're crossing
spot.
Over and they don't know to watch out at that point. And the computer isn't going to know that.
I think it will. I think that's in the game plan.
But tell me, honestly, why have a driverless car? So that you can sit behind the wheel and sleep or read a book or watch television? Why would you want a driverless car?
Okay, how many deaths per year can be attributed to automobiles?
Oh, I'm certain it's very high.
And I think that's probably the big reason right there.
You know what I think we're missing?
The car's going to get there, there's not going to be anybody in it.
Well, you're in the car, you're just sleeping or doing something.
It's a joke.
I know,
So, you got all these cars driving around and nobody in them.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to save a lot of people, let me tell you that now.
I've got a good reason for driverless cars.
Okay, what is
it? You go to a very congested city. You've been in rush hour traffic where it's go fast and then stop. But you're back and forth.
Stop and go.
Driverless cars will anticipate and know eventually. I mean, when most cars on the road are driverless, they're going to know the traffic patterns. And they're going to be able to take cars a lot more efficiently and the people in them through a congested area.
I want the helicopter car.
Well, I think I subscribe to rapid transit. other ways of getting around. And, you know, in my fantasy world, and you probably, Dan, have drawn little pictures of this kind of thing. So you drive your car over onto this little rail, and you zip along on that rail, and you're in your car, and then you just turn off, just like, you know. I understand what you're saying, Teresa, but I think the whole idea of turning our worlds over to electronics is, I mean, it's nuts, really, because you're losing all personal control. It's all gone over to machines. Talk about people complaining about not being able to have a job. They don't have a job because the robots are taking their jobs. You know, the more we use technology, the less people are going to be actively doing things. It's just the way it is. I personally think that's kind of sad. Maybe we need to go back to seeing farming as a high-skilled industry so that people want to do it, you know? Maybe that's a
philosophical conversation, yeah. I think, about whether or not a few, first of all, are going to recognize the robots, the AI, as being entities unto themselves with having their own set of rights.
There you go.
And
sure.
How do you want to interact with them?
Build a wall.
Build a wall.
I'm saying, keep those robots out. We don't need them.
Okay, but let's take
let's live in a dome.
Take a turn and look at any other predictions. And we're also at the point where our recording engineer is going to have to start snipping out things that we said. And so let's see if we can kind of wrap this up. New Year's resolutions. Who here at the table has a New Year's resolution?
Let's hear one from you, Dan.
This one's going to surprise you.
Okay.
Toilet seats.
Oh, that is a surprise.
Teresa, what's your resolution? Does it involve toilets?
No.
File for divorce tomorrow morning.
I made a joke about the storage unit, and it's true confessions time. I actually have two storage units.
Uh-oh.
Because when we moved here, they didn't have a large one. So I have two that are just three doors away from each other that are smaller. I need to pare down to one. I am the keeper of all the family heirlooms, but I can get down to one. And I should in the next year.
Do you have people that need to come and get their family heirlooms or kids or anybody that you're storing stuff for? I went through this with when they get out of college. They were still in a storage shed. And you have to say, this is the date the dad is emptying the storage shed. So if you want those books from UC Santa Barbara and San Diego State, you come and get them or they're going to Goodwill.
Well, Frankie, I personally am the most sentimental sap in the family. I have one son. He doesn't want most of this. Here's how bad it is. I have two complete sets of dishes from my ex's mother.
No guarantee.
I have some family heirlooms. I could let you have mine, too, if you really got into it.
Yeah. We took on somebody else's heirlooms.
That's tough.
Somebody who moved away from Brookings and didn't have room in the car for this one last item, and now we have it in storage somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Get it?
And we come full circle.
What's your resolution, Frankie?
My resolution for this year?
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Lose the weight that I gained from last year when I quit smoking. That was it.
I think that's...
One hit record.
That's enough.
Yeah.
That's enough, yeah.
Just take your time, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing it until January 2nd.
There's in no the meantime...
I'm passing on mom's,
mother's fudge.
Sweet potato pies, fudge, lemon, prime rib. I'm going on for a week. I'm hitting that stuff like a Samoan linebacker.
And I've always had a sweet tooth, but I really did succumb to chocolate-covered peanuts and almonds and all kinds of nice cookies and things that I love. But anyway, so if I am going to make a resolution, it would have to do with walking more and eating less.
You don't have one, do you?
You're one of the
humble
people. She's waiting till springtime.
That's right.
No, I have one, but it's sort of a continuation of the one I've been on. Only I see that I need to step up my game when it comes to the physical side of things, the yoga and stuff like that. That it's been what I was saying earlier. Tomorrow I'll do it. And tomorrow has come. So I have to get on that.
And you, the listener, what is your New Year's resolution? We dare you to email us with what you think you're going
listen
to do.
More KCIW shows.
Hey, that's a great
that's
idea.
That's a very good resolution. There are lots of new fun shows.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, keep listening.
Yeah, keep on listening.
Thank you, everybody.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.